faith-inspiring radio. This is UCB Ireland.
Welcome to this week's Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. We are in Colorado Springs, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I've got a wonderful guest with us this week, and it's a pleasure to welcome Nellie Grison to Focus on Friday, otherwise known as Nellie Ward.
Right, Ward.
Ward, now that takes you back a long time.
Yeah. I think I was Grison more than I was a Ward, though.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good to hear. That is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Nellie, it's great to have you and to just have this opportunity to chat on Focus on Friday and to talk about your life, to talk about the second chapter of Acts, mm-hmm. to talk about how you grew up and, you know, just to see that thread of God through your life.
Yes.
Highs and the lows.
Yes.
And I want to start not with the second chapter.
Oh, well, that's a good place to start.
Okay. I want to start with you as a kid.
Yeah, well.
All right. So how was childhood for you?
Childhood was a little difficult. I am number 8 of 9 children. Grew up in a Catholic home. My parents were lovely, even though, you know, I'll have to go on that later, but they died early, so I didn't get to really know them like I would a teenager or a young adult.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. But we lived in North Dakota. Poor family. My dad was a migrant farmer. My mom was a school teacher.
Okay.
She didn't teach after they got married. I don't know why. I guess raising children. So they lived on a farm outside of Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Okay.
So they raised children.
That's a harsh place to live as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of harsh. I don't know how they originally got there.
Right.
And my grandmother was there and grandfather. So they were, I think I have a lot of family from Minnesota, actually.
Okay.
But a lot of relatives that I do not know of. So,
yeah.
So we lived there. I was born in Grand Forks. Lived there for about 6 years. My mother started getting ill. We didn't know what was happening, and she started having kind of seizures.
Mm.
And we're like, what is that? And stuttering and having a hard time. So my dad was confused. I think we all were. And my aunt, she's from a family of 4, and her sister took her in. They live about 50 miles from where we lived, and she cared for her for a while. And then one of her younger sisters, who lived out in California, talked to her husband, and my grandmother would go visit her 4 children. My mother was the oldest, would go visit her children throughout the year. So everybody had 3 months.
Mm.
So at the time, my grandmother was out in California visiting with my aunt, her youngest sister. And she said, you know, we need to move the family out here. She needs medical help. So they were very instrumental in us moving from North Dakota, the whole family, out to California, Northern California.
That must have been a major change.
It was scary. Yeah,
they're polar opposites in terms of states.
Right, right. My aunt just knew that we were poor, and she knew that if she could get us better help, she just needed family around her,
which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So part of my family, my dad stayed behind. Make a long story short, my brother Matthew is younger than I am. He's number 9, and I am one of my 2 sisters and brothers. My brothers stayed. We took a train.
Okay.
From North Dakota all the way to California.
How old were you when that happened?
Let's see, 1962. So I was 6.
Wow.
Yeah. So we moved in. We got to California. We moved in with my cousins and my aunt and her husband. And my mom got some help, but just a local clinic. It wasn't like taking her. I had no idea. I thought they would take her to county or do something, you know. And they, I guess money-wise, it just couldn't afford it. And they diagnosed her with epilepsy.
Okay.
So they, you know, just drugged her up with phenobarbital and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so my mom was kind of out of it for, you know, after that. I mean, she'd come around, but she'd have moments of that. So that was really difficult. So
when you were a 6-year-old kid without a mom, basically.
Right.
Even though she's there, she's not.
Right. And so my brother, they all came out from North Dakota. We had a small house. Mm-hmm. We lived together. And some of my other family, older family, moved out. There's like, my mom had first 5 kids the first 6 years she was married. So my oldest sister, I'm 68 now, and she's 85.
Right.
So I have nieces that are older and nephews that are older than you, Robbie.
Right. Well, that's saying something.
I mean, she's only like 11 months. Yeah. I have a niece that's 11 months younger than my brother.
Okay.
So it's an interesting family.
Yeah.
We lived in Sacramento area.
Mm-hmm.
Got my mom help for, that was 62. And she never really got better, I think, because she was misdiagnosed.
Right.
So towards, I went to school, went to Catholic school, really enjoyed it. I loved church, I loved God.
Were you a good student?
No. No, I mean, I think with having my mother sick, I mean, I look back at that time, and my dad was always busy, and brother, I felt a little neglected.
Right.
You know, a little bit, because we didn't have the money to instill stuff in us. She saw all these nine kids with talent.
Yeah, yeah.
With musical talent.
Yeah.
She was a piano player and a violinist.
Wow.
And my grandfather was a violinist.
Okay.
So I don't understand why, if I had this many children, why would I find somebody?
Yeah.
Come on, help me. But it wasn't that way in those days.
It was very independent, wasn't it? Parenting was very independent.
It was just, it was strange. Yeah. So I didn't understand all that. So that was hard for her. But she taught my sister how to play the piano a little bit, a few chords on the piano. So that was kind of fun. So she still got progressively ill. We lived in Northern California and loved my school years. Was an average student. But, you know, it was interesting because we've always loved music. Mm. We loved the radio. We loved that. And my brother Matt, we could discover he could sing way early. You know, and we'd play, the Beach Boys or the Beatles would come on, and he'd harmonize. That's all he knew how to do. So, and we would just sing and sing. We just had such a good time. So Matthew and I knew we could kind of sing together, but with Annie, she's older. Mm. I mean, we are 10 years apart.
Yeah, and you still didn't know this at this stage, did you?
I know, but my sisters, when they were in North Dakota, they were younger. They would do co-ops and things, farm things, and they would do like the Andrews sisters. So they could sing together. They could do stuff. But when they came out, marriages, whatever, they just didn't link up.
Mm.
So I didn't know that till just years ago that they did anything like that. So and just so much history I don't know anything about. But it's okay.
It's a funny thing that, you know, you kind of get on with your life because it evolves around you.
Yeah.
And then you discover things later on in life. You think, oh, never knew about that.
Never knew you did that. Yeah.
Were you a rebellious child?
No. No, I had my tantrums when I didn't get something. I don't think I was. My mother, she was very devout.
Right.
My dad was a Lutheran background, but he he went Catholic.
He converted to?
Converted, that's the word.
Yeah.
I don't like any kind of conversion.
Yeah.
So I'm not just no. I like good conversion. Don't go, you coming to Jesus is good.
Yeah.
But anyway, so... I guess raising family was the important thing to him. So, but my mom was very instrumental. There are a few things that I remember very distinctly about her and her strength. And she had us pray. She had us do the rosary. She had us, you know.
So you had an understanding of who God was.
Right, and the church and reverence to God.
Yeah.
I really knew what that was. You know, it was more than just Sunday.
So God actually played a part in your life, even though you didn't have that personal relationship with Him.
Right.
That was happening as a teenager?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, well, I came to the Lord when I was 14 years old.
Okay.
So my sister, actually, that's in the group, Annie, I saw a difference in her. She went off, oh, my gosh, when she was 18, 19, 20, she was going to be doing... That she and my other sisters were doing folk stuff in San Francisco at the Purple Onion, and so they were singing with groups, and they were doing stuff. She was going to be on. So I don't know if anybody where you guys are, but there's a show back in the 60s called the Mod Squad.
Oh, I've heard about it.
But my sister was going to be. She was going to, you know, going to be the actual, you know, going to take what's her name, Peggy Lipton's place.
Okay.
And so it was so funny that didn't happen. But anyway, she. She was very, very good, very good singer, and she did a lot of stuff. And so she met my brother-in-law. He was a recording studio, a DJ in Sacramento, and they met through some friends. And so they knew each other a long time, and then that, you know, they moved away and never, you know, rekindled anything until later. And he actually, you know, got saved through his drug dealer. So the drug dealer brought my brother-in-law to the Lord, and he loved Annie still, and he brought her to Jesus. And the big thing for her was, she knew, he said, you know, you have to be born again to enter the kingdom of God. She goes, that makes such sense to me, because where my life has come and what I've done, and, you know, I need a newness. I need something completely different and beautiful, and I need a new life. And she understood that. So she came to the Lord. She then married my brother-in-law. And so within a year, we were living with them. But before that, she would come to visit.
Wow.
And I hadn't seen her in a long time.
Yeah.
She walked in the door, and I saw a physical difference on her face. I said, and I'm, what, 13?
Yeah.
I go, she's got something.
Wow.
Because she was always searching, you know, through meditation or, you know, the Eastern religions.
Sure.
Trying to do all this, just trying to do it.
Yeah.
And she was a big Beatleite. She loved the
Beatles. Okay.
So they influenced her writing and what she, you know, very much so. So when she walked in the room, I said, I got to know what you have. So she took me in the back bedroom and told me about Jesus. And she's, you know, and I was like, yeah. I mean, the way she explained it, it was real, you know. And I said, well, yeah, you're different, Annie. I see it in you. She goes, yes, you know, I'm free. And so I accept the Lord right there and then. I didn't understand it all, but I knew what that meant.
UCB Ireland, more than just words, more than just music.
This is Focus on Friday. Thank you for joining us. And my guest is Nellie Ward, still at this stage. Okay,
yeah.
We're going to say this at this stage. From, we can now mention it, second chapter of Acts. Just a few moments ago, Nellie, you were talking about how Annie led you to the Lord.
Right.
You were 13.
Yeah. Well, actually, 14.
How was that? How was it received that you'd now become a Christian?
I don't think it really was, didn't matter. I don't think it was an obvious thing at that point. Everybody was just, you know, my mom was sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, my sister, I think this situation actually happened a few months after my mom died. Looking back now. So this was after my mom died.
Okay.
That, to make a long story short, she was getting worse, so we finally took her to a county hospital. And a nurse looked at her and said, there's something just, you know, organically wrong with this woman. And what they had back then, I don't know how they could find it, but they found a tumor in her brain as big as her fist.
No.
Yeah. So they tried to operate, and she never came out of
it. Never came off the table.
No.
Wow.
So that was hard on my dad. But
it must have been hard on you as well.
Yeah, my brother, sure. Yeah, because I didn't know if she really knew the Lord or... You know, I knew she loved God, but I didn't, you know, I kind of understood a little bit about what God and really what that meant.
Yeah.
But she told my sister before she died, she goes, you know, Annie, I don't know a lot of stuff, but she goes, and even the Catholic religion, she goes, but if I don't get in my prayer closet with Jesus every day, nothing matters. Isn't that sweet?
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So I got to tell that to one of my brothers who, I mean, not too many years ago.
Yeah.
He thought for all the time that she wasn't going to be in heaven. And I was like, why do we do this?
Yeah.
But I told him, and he's just bald. He's like, you're kidding. I said, no. He told him.
We just never know, do we?
No.
We never know.
No.
And we just, that's where faith comes into it, and that's where our trust in the Lord comes into it.
Yeah.
Did you struggle then after that to find your own identity or...
I think a little bit. I mean, after my mom died, there was 2 years there. My dad died 2 years later from leukemia.
Wow.
So that's when my sister actually brought him to the Lord before he died.
Well, that's
and
wonderful.
He prayed for the black sheep of the family. So
okay.
It's so cool how well that worked out. But it was interesting. I think after my mom died, I think my dad just kind of melted down.
Right.
And he couldn't deal with the family, and he tried to live for us kids for 2 years and couldn't do that. So I think a lot of the younger ones were pretty neglected. I mean, I would go to friends' houses and just stay.
Right.
And then my dad would freak out, you know, I'm a young teenager, where is she all of a sudden? It's like dawns on him, you know. So I never felt unloved, but I definitely I wasn't cared for.
Okay. Yeah, I understand.
So, yeah.
I understand that.
So when my dad got sick at my mother's funeral. She died July 22nd, 1968. At my mother's funeral, he said he was going to die in 2 years. And we're like, what? We're like, come on. So 2 years later, I think he knew he was sick. He was diagnosed with leukemia. and went through some, you know, some of the transfusions and all that, and it was just too late. And he died, actually, he died on the 18th of July and was buried on the day my mother died 2 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a hard one.
That was, yeah.
Yeah. So after that, I was a little numb.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't go up and see my dad. I saw my mom, and I didn't look like her when I was 12 years old, going, that's not my mom.
Yeah.
It was good for me because I realized what a body, our bodies are just shells. And every inkling of my mother was not there.
Right.
So I'm 12 years old going, where is she?
Yeah.
Where is she? Mm. You know, that was huge for me as far as believing in heaven and believing that God exists. And
it's a big thing for you to see as well, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. My mother was instrumental. I remember one day I asked her, I was probably about 10 years old, and I asked her, you know, I don't know what brought this up, but I said, so Mom, maybe we're in catechism, we're talking about stuff, and I said, who's going to be greater in heaven? I said, you know, and there's always somebody, you do all these great works.
Yes.
Yeah. Catholics, we love our works, and they're wonderful, because faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, who's going to be greater? And my mom just looked at me. She's so sweet. And I remember her face and everything. I just, not so much her voice, but her face and her, just her look. She was so loving. And she said, I want you to go in the kitchen. And I said, well, that's not going to answer my question. Why do you want me to make you something?
Yeah, here's wisdom.
She goes, no, go in the kitchen and go get a pitcher, pitcher of water.
Yeah.
I want you to fill that up all the way. Okay, so I filled it up. She goes, now I want you to get a glass and go fill it up all the way. I said, okay, now put them next to each other. So I did. I'm going, oh boy, where is this going? And she goes, look at those. And I said, yeah. She goes, which one is greater? And I wanted to say the pitcher, but I'm going, they're the same. She goes, that's how it'll be in heaven. We will be used what we've done to the fullness of who we are.
Mm.
We are all the same. I thought she was amazing.
Well, she knew it wasn't about works in that respect. You don't build, you know, if I do this, I'm going to get this size or that size or that
size.
Position. It's not about that at all.
No, it's fullness.
Yeah.
It's fullness of Christ and fullness of who we are in Him.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that was phenomenal. She answered the question perfectly. You know, she's amazing. So anyway, I just have those little tidbits of my mother.
That's good.
Cherish.
It's good that you hold on to those.
Cherish, yeah. So after my dad's death, there were still four children at home.
Right.
So Matthew and I, my sister Annie, just recently got married. Mm-hmm. We were living in Northern California at the time. She got married to her husband, who's a recording, he produced, and he was just an engineer.
Right.
A recording engineer. So he worked with some number of artists in Hollywood.
Okay.
So Matthew and I, my aunt couldn't take us in, she had too many kids, so we went and lived with them.
Okay.
So Matthew and I were the only two. I was separated from my two brothers. We had two brothers still at home. They went to live with an oldest brother.
Right.
Lived there in Sacramento. So that was an adjustment. I had
public
school. My brother had a hard time adjusting. My brother-in-law was not easy to live with. Annie was great, you know, she did the best she could, but she was only 23 years old when she took us in.
Wow, that's a big adjustment for her.
Yeah. And those two, they prayed for us
because
we were the youngest, the most sensitive.
Yeah.
So I kind of really grew the first 3 or 4 months of living there and with them. We lived in this old house, oh my gosh, it's like 30s house in Hollywood.
Wow.
I mean, the glam thing, it's not there anymore,
but
it had all the, I mean, it was just beautiful, all the plaster, pillars, stained glass, glass knobs, doorknobs, great French doors.
What you expect Hollywood to be.
Oh, it's just beautiful up on this hill. You know, other houses were around, but just old and it was falling apart, basically.
Yeah.
But it was just such a neat time, you know. So,
did you grow closer to Annie at that stage?
I did.
Yeah.
I did, because she was influential in my spiritual growth.
Right, okay. So,
For
me, it was my older brother, actually, was the one who brought me to a place where I went to meetings and thought, there's got to be something more. And Fran had this kind of something about him, and I went along. And it was because of him that actually, you know, I realized that I really needed to give my life to the Lord. And I was 15 at the time. So it's amazing how our older siblings do actually influence what we do and how we do it.
Right.
And even if it's only a beginning foundational move,
Exactly.
That's what it takes.
Yeah.
How did you get out of new schools and things? Was that difficult?
Well, you know, I was really nervous. I mean, this is Hollywood. It's a whole other ball game, and I had to take the bus, and I had to go down Hollywood Boulevard. And
right.
It was a crazy time, you know.
Yeah.
But we prayed, and I asked the Lord. I said, I was going into ninth grade, and that's the upper junior high, so I'm like 14, almost 15. And I said, Lord, you have to help me, because I don't know what it is to go to like a homeroom. You know, you have the homeroom where you begin, then you have classes.
Yeah.
And I said, you just got to find me somebody. You have to find me a Christian girl that I can hang out with. I get there the first day. I'm sitting down. The girl behind me taps me on the shoulder and goes, are you a Christian?
No.
First thing she says to me.
No way.
We were best friends.
Wow.
The whole year.
Wow.
And God would just dump on us. I mean.
Isn't it incredible?
Oh. That year, I mean, I just grew so much, but she was influential and just a joy for me to be with. Mm. And such gave me such peace. I said, God, you're so good. You know, I don't know if my brother got that. That's a good question.
You have to ask him one night.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to your music.
Mm.
You know, you and Phil Kagi and even Barry McGuire. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of things that I would listen to rather than... I was into rock. I was into that kind of stuff. And but there were more than 50% of my time. It would be Second Chapter or... so I kind of knew you before I knew you.
Right.
And it's been a pleasure to get to know Matt a little bit and to get to know you over the last 8 months or so with you being on our last... Christian Heritage Tour.
Which was marvelous.
It was great to have you. It really was.
Just such a joy for me.
Having been around the industry as long as I have, I probably have a better insight to the industry than a lot of people. There are so many people out there who will have Second Chapter of Acts albums in their collection.
Wow.
So many people who will listen to us right now who go, Second Chapter, oh yeah, I love that.
Mm.
And of course, people will go to Easter Song as, you know, and you think, of course you will. But there's so much in there.
Yeah.
And there's a misunderstanding.
Hmm.
Because you make albums, you do tours, you do everything, and they've got to be so wealthy.
No. No.
It isn't like that, is it?
No.
And it wasn't like that for you guys.
No, there have been many times we would, because we did love offerings.
Yeah.
And then eventually, because we had a band, we had to take care of, you know, five or six families.
Yeah.
And then we had all this, you know, we had the hall, we had all this stuff. Mm. We would charge $1 per seat.
No way.
And some days were good and some weren't. We needed a quota every night just to make ends, make it all even. And we didn't. God seemed to raise it up. But there are many times my husband Steve, we'd come home from tour and not have any money. We didn't make any money. And it was on purpose.
The reason I bring it up so early in our conversation now about Second Chapter is because I want our listeners to understand where it came from, what it did in terms of the impact it made globally.
Wow.
Without the big paychecks.
Right.
Too many people, and I say this with complete respect to anybody who's in the music industry, especially the Christian music industry, it isn't and it can never be about the paycheck at the end.
No.
And for you guys, I mean, as a little guy, a teenager in Dublin, North Dublin, listening to you guys sing with Barry McGuire on the album To The Bride and thinking, these guys are amazing. Wow, must be so cool. Yeah. It must be amazing.
They are.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh, no.
But it wasn't.
No, love. The tour was hard.
You know? How did the Second Chapter come about?
Well... the three of us, we lived together, and my brother-in-law, Buck, got my sister a piano.
Yeah.
That called it an upright piano, was missing a few ivories.
Yeah.
And they called it Brother Bear. So she, because she was already a singer, not well-known or anything, but she attended a church, and she was in the choir, and she was the star.
Okay.
And she did solos and did all the stuff. She's fantastic. But she would play the piano. Just for her own enjoyment and worship to the Lord.
Yeah.
She never thought she would be anything. Oh, God, us three? You've got to be kidding me. No way in the world.
Yeah.
So Matthew and I would, when school was over, we would get our rocking chairs because we have to move when we sing.
Okay.
Oh, we can't stand still.
Okay.
We got to move. We'd bring our rocking chairs. She would play and we would just start singing. Now, Matthew only knew harmony And I had to learn harmony, and Annie usually sang the melody because she would sing something. Sometimes we didn't even have words. We would just hum or just do, you know, just pads.
Of just worship. Singing,
just
yeah.
worship.
Yeah.
Because we were so broken and hurt and kind of lost.
Did it come out of that?
It did. It came out of my parents' death. It came out of all that weaving that God did. That's what was birthed. Now, did we know that we would? If anybody would told us what we would have freaked out because
right.
we are the most unlikely people, untrained.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding us, and us three out of the nine.
Yeah,
it's just my sister and I are 10 years apart. Matthew and I are two years yeah. apart. So, but just the three of us, it was so interesting. And then when we started singing, the blend, and it was just it was remarkable. I mean, just. So awesome, and we just worship God, and that's where it was birthed. Not ever being a group or not singing to anybody, it was for us.
It's remarkable that out of the pain and the suffering, and there's so many people who listen to us who go through pain and suffering.
Oh, yeah,
whatever that might be for people, that God takes the brokenness,
yes,
and He turns it into something amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact, I've never met Annie, but I've spent time with you and I've spent time with Matt.
You'd love her.
And I love the fact that we can laugh.
Yeah. Yep.
But it wasn't always like that.
No. It was very hard.
What was the hardest thing?
All those years, you mean? Of what the hardest
yeah.
thing for me to do?
Yeah.
Actually learning music, learning the songs, because I had a really hard time.
Okay.
Annie usually wrote.
Yeah.
We would help with lyrics. Matthew was easy. So they were both extremely talented. So for me, it was a little harder. I mean, I couldn't hear half steps. I could hear whole steps. I couldn't that kind of thing. I just didn't, you know. So it was a challenge for me all the time. I had the hardest parts.
Did you feel on the edge?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah. It was always a challenge for me. And Annie wasn't hard. It's just that, you know, she and Matthew were just so good at stuff, and I was a little slower. I think they had a hard time, you know, adjusting. Later it got better, but that was one of the hardest things. And then later on, the hardest thing for me was leaving the children.
Right.
Because I traveled, and so did my husband with me. So we'd leave them for, you know, 3 weeks at a time when they were little.
Yeah. Yeah. when they were. Yeah.
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 But
world tours, or was it just America? Did you get out of
the... We never did Asia or South America.
Okay.
We did a lot of Europe. We did Canada a lot. Where else did we go? We went to Australia, New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah.
But mostly the United
mostly
States.
Mostly the States.
A few things in Mexico, but not much.
What did you want from the second chapter of Acts?
Well, that's a good question. I really wanted people to experience... a gift that God gave these people.
Okay.
And it to be not then again above, but just, I don't even want to say anointed because that puts you in a different place too, but just how God can take three people, not even knowing our history, and make such a beautiful thing and give us music and be able to encourage the body of Christ and those around that. I wanted people to see Jesus.
Did it happen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, people would come year after year. We were their event.
Yeah.
And for years.
Yeah, every year, yeah.
And they just, you know, they were just astounded. They said, it feeds me for the whole year, just about. And they were just so grateful, you know, when God would come. And it kind of puts a heavy responsibility on you, but then you realize you can't do it.
Yeah.
It was just, we just made ourselves available to God. And, you know, some days were harder than others. You know, you're just doing, you kind of wrote, doing your thing, you know, but you're obedient.
Yeah.
And you don't feel it. It's not emotion.
Yeah.
But you know the Holy Spirit will show up because you've given it to us. We used to pray before every tour. Give us a message, Lord, of what we're supposed to share. Give us individually. We didn't want to make it so rote that it was just the same thing, but just a simple message, and then we could take it from there. And it seemed to really be beneficial for us to have a direction. You know,
and how did it work then as siblings on the road? Did you get on okay?
Yeah, we did. We did pretty good. Annie, Matthew, and I did really well. Yeah, we
which is very unusual.
Yeah, I think the age difference.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of adjustment when we all moved in early.
Yes, of course.
So there was a lot of stuff, you know, like differences with Matthew and my brother-in-law and working out my sister. I was covering for Matt because I lived with him and you don't understand and, you know, that kind of stuff. Just the dynamics of the family.
He's becoming another alpha male, isn't he, as he's growing up.
Right, exactly.
And, that you know, mm-hmm. you end up locking horns mm-hmm. On many things. Mm-hmm. And all of us at some level have been there. Mm-hmm. And, we've been led by incredibly good people and been privileged to be led by good people. And sometimes you end up with difficulties or issues, but as long as we can learn out of things and move forward.
That's the whole thing. I think God wants us to learn. Yeah.
And I mean, you guys were pioneers in the world of music.
Yeah.
Because what we have today, everybody who downloads music on Spotify or wherever else you get your music from, or even those people who still buy vinyl again because it's so back in vogue, there was a moment when there was nothing.
There was nothing. No, we had to create it.
And you did. And you, along with so many other, you know, Keith Green and many others like that, even Larry Norman, who was just out there on the edge and doing his thing.
He used to bring, when we lived in the Hollywood house, he would bring people to live at our house. Larry Norman would.
Larry would.
Yeah. He would drop them off.
Yeah.
There were some interesting people. There were some really good ones, too. Yeah. But some were just like, where did you get this guy?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they would stay from, you know, a week to months sometimes, you know.
So here's the question on that then, okay?
Uh-huh.
If you're pioneering something, who are you looking to be your point of reference?
I don't think we really knew. I mean, we knew we had, I think it was just a tool of evangelism.
Yeah.
I mean, we were looking for the lost.
Yeah.
We didn't realize that we were also ministering to the church, but I think that was, I mean, you know, the Jesus movement, that's all it was. I mean, it was just so amazing. That time between, 69 and 73.
Yeah.
It was like, we weren't in depth in that, but we were part of it.
Yeah.
But everything was just, you know, it was so ripe for people to come. Because they were just coming out of the whole sexual revolution, the whole hippie thing in San Francisco. And they were looking for something.
Exactly. There was a real desire for truth.
Right. And so Jesus just fit that, you know, because he was truth. And they saw the reality of it.
So I was only talking to somebody recently about this, about how people look at, you know, modern day worship groups like Hills and Bethel and others that are around, and Elevation Worship, those kind of things. All of these new things. They're not new.
No.
Because before Hills and Bethel, in the 80s, let's go back as far as the 80s, we had Hosanna music.
Right, Hosanna.
And then we had before them Maranatha music.
Right.
And before that.
Yeah. All sorts of.
We had you guys.
Yeah.
And not you guys performing then in the 70s, although you did.
Towards
the end of the 70s. Mm-hmm. But there was always somebody pioneering something.
74, I guess that's not the end.
Yeah.
Well, that's making me feel old.
Was that when you started in 74?
Well, we actually sang. We would do coffee houses before that.
So, really?
Yeah, in Southern California. So we were doing stuff in 72, 73. Yeah, really early.
Yeah. How did it get to a stage where it stopped? Because it stopped in 88.
Well, we took one year off, one year in, I think, 76, because we got notoriety and we were doing stuff, but we were starting to feed the machine.
Okay.
And
was that a problem for you?
That was. I didn't like that. I don't think any of us did. It was kind of put up on us.
Okay.
So we stopped and we recalibrated and set our feedback on what we truly believed and what we were for.
Okay.
But there was personal conflict.
Okay.
There was change, just families growing, differences. It became difficult, unfortunately. We were very popular. We were at our height, our zenith, I would say.
Yeah.
But it got to the point that it was affecting us.
Right.
Our personal relationships.
Okay.
And God wasn't happy with that. He still used it, but he's gone. It was sad, really. It could have been different.
But there's a point where you look at what's important and what's the future, and you've got to say, okay, unless this changes, we have to stop.
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't healthy.
It's a very brave decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because suddenly in 88, you're on the cusp of of earning money,
right?
Of making it big time, and
well,
you know,
we never really did make.
No, no, you didn't. But it looked like you could have done.
We could have done.
Yeah,
yeah, but
and it just stopped. The right thing to do.
Well, it was it was spiritually the right thing to do. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to explain.
I understand that. So
It was an eternal problem.
Yeah. We'll leave that to one side now. Right. We'll leave the second chapter to one side and go, so when it stopped, what did Nelly do?
I paused, basically.
Yeah.
It was hard. We didn't want to live in Texas anymore.
Okay.
We didn't have to. We lived there for 5 years to hopefully we could redeem some of the relationship problems, but okay. it never was resolved. So we moved to Colorado in 1993.
Wow, it's a beautiful place to live.
Yeah, it is.
Did you continue to sing?
No, I did worship team at our church, but okay. not out there singing. No, Annie and Matthew did.
You know, right. Okay.
Annie was pretty busy, but no, I didn't. I raised my kids.
And that that became then your focus. That became
pretty much. Yeah. And then later on, I just Steve needed a lot of help, but I didn't help him. I wasn't part of the business. We worked together for years. And he goes, how are you going to help me in this business? I went,
I'm sure that probably things could have been done differently. But I think in life, when we look back at things, we could say we could have done that differently, every aspect of what we do in life.
Sure, sure.
What's the one amazing thing you take away from that chapter of your life? Not, forgive the pun.
Being able, seeing this kid who was basically abandoned in a way, come to know the Lord and was used of God in such a remarkable way and was able to go all over the world and be used and see people changed and continue to change. Even to this day, I get letters from people.
Wow.
That to me was what I've come away with. I've had people healed at our concerts.
Yeah.
They'd come up and, they'd be completely healed. She's like, you just start crying because it was so evident. It was life-changing.
You just get used.
Yeah, but it was so refreshing because the Lord restored me at the same time. I knew it wasn't me because I can't make that happen. It's just being available. And I think all of us who are available to God, no matter what it is, we're available, we listen to him, we follow him, like on your little UCB, follow this month.
Yeah.
You follow him, you will find.
Yeah.
He will use you, and there will be fulfillment in that. I marvel at people going, I can't follow God because it'll limit whatever I do. I said, you follow God, there'll be nothing that you won't be able to do and live and be at peace and be full of love because God is everything you were made for.
Exactly. I love the verse that says, he is able to do exceeding abundantly more than we can ask or even think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I can ask and think an awful lot.
Me too.
And he can do so much more than that.
We're so limited. Yeah, yeah. We're so human,
I want to jump forward because life here in Colorado for you has obviously been a good life, a fulfilled life, a life of normality.
Yes.
To a degree. Family.
You have to realize I would travel even when I was young. I mean, I didn't date.
Right, okay.
I mean, if maybe a guy in the band, and I never really hung out with them. Didn't do well with musicians. but, they're in the band, and that would last a week or two. That was a relationship.
Yeah.
Jim and Carol Owens, they're another whole...
Yeah?
Yeah. Their daughter, Jamie, and I were very close.
Okay.
I mean, each other's besties in our weddings.
All right, okay.
So after a while, you live with Buffy and my sister, and I had to get away from them.
Yeah.
It was 18, 19, I needed to move. We were traveling with them, singing. I needed another place to live. So this Owens family took me in.
Okay.
It was great for a while. I don't know. I was always very insecure because I didn't date, and I thought anybody who really knew me wouldn't really like me. You're at that age, it's like, and I just couldn't see me. I just didn't think anybody would be interested, to be quite honest. I knew him a little bit because we met at a party, and then he came over to the house after that. We just sat and started bantering back and forth, our humor. And I'm going, this guy can... give it back as much as, I can, as much as I give, he can take it right back. I'm like, but the thing that got us is there was this album that I loved for years, and it was by Mylon Lefevre.
Okay.
And it was called, I don't even know what the name of the album was, but it's one song, and he starts, reciting the lyrics or something, and we talked about it, I said, you know that album? Nobody knows that album. Nobody. He goes, yeah, I love it. It's one of my favorite. And we just clicked. It was like one of those things where it's just like, oh, you're so familiar. And I just felt so comfortable. I didn't have to put on, a false anything. I was just totally me.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going anywhere with this. It wasn't like I was like, but I just enjoyed him so much. We enjoyed each other's humor.
Amazing.
So it was just like a really good friendship. So then it just developed, and we just, you know, he traveled, I traveled, so we really didn't see much of each other. Right. But eventually, when he stopped traveling, you know, he was more home, and we developed a relationship.
How long have you been married now?
Oh, gosh. In January, it'll be 47 years.
Incredible.
I know. I was just a baby. Yeah. I just turned 22.
You were. You were just a kid.
I just touched a little bit.
Yeah, you were just a little
baby. We look back at pictures, we're like, what were we thinking?
Listen, I got married in 88, and I look back and go, really?
Yeah. 88 is when we quit.
Yeah.
That's a long
time ago. Well, there was no connection between the band quitting and me getting married. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the fact that you came on the UCB Ireland Christian Heritage Tour earlier this year. You were life and soul of the party. It was just great.
That was sweet.
But I loved the fact, one of the things that is so special to me on that trip, and we're doing, of course, again in 25, is on day 8 we stop at Derrynane Beach.
That was just remarkable.
And just for one reason, and that is to pray for America.
Right.
One of the things I've learned over the time of being back home in Ireland is just how influential a small island has been.
Oh, for sure.
And I know you said to me that you loved it, you want to go back. And have you taken any one thing away, or is it just too many things?
It's a lot of things. But I think I really got a warmth from the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even walking on little, you know, beautiful little villages and they walked through, they would always, there's always somebody to greet you.
Always somebody to say hi.
I know. And we're kind of that way in America in some areas.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always those, you know, metropolitan areas that don't have to be But there's just a spirit. There's just a spirit there that just was very welcoming. I loved it. The beauty, of course, was just outstanding. And just, how do you describe Ireland? There's a depth there, and I think one of the things that got me was we were traveling through the area, and I love how you're my people. Your counties are really important to you, like our states.
Yes, they are.
So every time you come into the county of Kerry, you're like, this is Kerry! And I'm like, okay! And I was like, this is your honor! Okay! And I love it because every place had its treasure.
Every county in Ireland has its own identity.
Oh, and I just was through that. That got me.
Yeah.
That got me because I said, how wonderful that there's ownership, and yet there's, you know, you're trying to unite the whole country.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's that unity still, you know, the individuality, but, you know, and there's always stuff working out, and there's the things you do, just like in America.
Yeah.
But there's that thing that I just really enjoyed. I loved it. I loved food. Food is great.
The food is great. Yeah, the food is great.
It was great.
It is.
I could do seafood chowder any day of the week. That was so good. It's so good.
It's a great advert for 2025. Thank you for that. We'll lift that piece out of the interview and make an advert for it.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that I took away from that time was at times your vulnerability.
Mm.
And I don't mean that you wore your heart on your sleeve. You didn't.
Hmm.
But it was a pleasure to see God do something special with you.
Hmm.
Whatever that was, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And God can do anything to anybody, anywhere.
That's right. It doesn't matter where you are.
But to see God do something special to you in Ireland, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And to hear you worship on Derrynane Beach and lead us in worship, that was special.
That was sweet.
There is always going to be a connection with me and you for as long, and you're welcome back to Ireland anytime.
I love it.
For as long as we go. But I wonder, it's amazing how we look at time. We're almost out of time.
I know.
It's just crazy.
I know. Last 10 years, I don't even know where it went.
No. How has life been for you, before we finish this time, how has life been for you for the last 10 years? What's excited you?
I've made friendships that I haven't been able to make because I travel so much.
Right.
Staying in one place, I have the depth of true camaraderie with people of the same spirit. I've really grown in that and understand that it's work to be a friend.
Yeah.
But I think for me, Jesus has become more of a person for me in this life, in the last few years. He's been more my warrior, the lover of my soul, the joy of my soul, the protector of my heart. He's been really my breath, my Yahweh.
That's what I love about you, your vulnerability and your openness to God. Nelly, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for opening your home to us.
I'm glad you're here.
And thank you for allowing me be a friend. God bless you.
Thank you.
UCB Ireland. Serving the church, reaching the nations.